Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Glenn Myers, who 6 years before COVID spent 4 weeks in a medically induced coma. That near-death experience got him thinking and led to the writing of two books, one of which is Bread, My Search for What Really Matters. Welcome to the show, Glenn.
Thank you, Hannah. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to have you. Thanks for joining us. So just take us back, if you can, to what happened to you 6 years before COVID and how you ended up in a coma.
So I was born actually with an unusual heart architecture, which was fine. I was a bit short of breath through my childhood and stuff, but everything was going fine until my late 40s, early 50s, when the electrics on my heart started to go wrong. They did various interventions. And then towards the end of two or three different interventions, they put me on a heart drug, which unfortunately I think I had a reaction to. And the reaction was my lungs filled with fluid. I couldn't breathe. I was in acute respiratory distress, just like people, the worst people with COVID. I was on a ventilator. Then they put a tube in my throat. And to do all that, and because I was pretty miserable by that time, they put me in a coma, medically induced coma. And I was in there for 4 weeks. They were trying to wake me up after 2 weeks, and usually I'm quite good in mornings, but it took them 2 weeks to wake me up. My family reading things to me, talking to me.
Gosh.
And eventually was able to come round, which was lovely. And I didn't know as I came round that it was rather against the odds. They hadn't expected me to survive. When I did come round, though, as anybody who's been in intensive care for a long time will know, I was completely paralysed. I couldn't move. They put a magazine on the bedside table next to me in the hospital. I couldn't even reach to read the magazine. So I had to learn again everything, how to swallow, how to walk, how to go to the loo, how to eat. So all of that convalescence took probably 18 months to 2 years, slowly getting better. And as often, I think, when you do have a sort of big life-changing experience like that, it causes you to rethink. And I found that there were two things especially that, for me, were both healing then and life-giving subsequently. So they were really key to getting better, but they were also key to what feels like living a happy, good, productive life and not having those questions. You know, am I wasting my days? Am I not quite doing what I'd like to be doing? So as an experience, it worked out okay, but not without a few scares for people along the way.
No, I was going to say, I mean, I guess when you're in a coma, you've no real idea what's going on and how long you're in a coma for. It's your family around you that are going through the agony of what's going on and if and when you're going to wake up.
That's right. I mean, I think at least once, possibly twice, you know, they gave my wife the talk. They said, you know, we're not expecting him to survive the night. Fortunately, I did. And the things that kind of helped so much to get better, though, were what I put in the book. The first one was kind of called it networking, or just being aware afresh of being part of a network of people, a group of people, your family and friends who love you and who you love. And in the normal course of events, you know, you don't normally, we kind of rub along, you don't normally necessarily know that, but when, or enjoy that, appreciate it so much. So when I was in the coma, my family kept a scrapbook. So they were writing letters to me, they were sticking in the cards and emails, some of them, that I was receiving. and just and even news items that I was missing. I missed the whole of May 2013. That's a month that I completely blanked out on. When I read those books, that book now, I mean, you just can't read it without sort of melting, because you realize actually that you're in a very fortunate place of being surrounded by people to whom you matter and people who matter to you. And just the awareness of that, I think, was hugely healing and restorative. Mm. And then as I got back home, and our two children are left home now, but the four of us, my wife, two children and me, we talked and talked for weeks, and it helped me to see the journey they'd been on, helped me to see, sort of share what I'd been on, because you have all sorts of exciting hallucinations when you're in a coma, and it takes a little while to adjust which is a hallucination and which is reality. I think this is reality, talking to you.
You never yes, quite I'm know. Here. This is me.
Oh, that's really good to know, Hannah. That's great.
it's interesting. I think that experience that you had of being, well, near death, if you like, and yes. coming out of the coma and having your lovely family around you, and so them so happy and appreciative that you're back home and out of that coma, and you being able to realize what is important, being them, yep, and love, that's right. friends and family, and yeah. how so many people don't get to experience that or realize that, because it's often something that people realize when they are near death, yes, you know, at the I end think, of life, because yep. throughout our lives we're so busy doing mm-hmm. so many other important things, and then it's only at the end when you realize none of that other stuff matters. It's all about love.
That's absolutely right. And I mean, reading this scrapbook is like going to your funeral without dying. You know, it's lovely. Everybody says nice stuff
yes.
about you. But of course you get to enjoy it. And to realize that's really important. Say the things to people that you think you want to say. You know, let people know that you love them, they matter to you. So that side of things just struck me as really important, both in healing and subsequently, and lots of other things, like you said, busy, we're doing things, are actually, when you face the sort of ultimate, a lot less important. It's like the old story, not too many people say on their deathbed, you know, I wish I'd spent more time in the office.
Exactly. Absolutely. Or I wish I'd bought a better handbag. Or,
yeah, exactly.
You know, there's so many things we could say, couldn't we? Those final
yeah,
moments,
right.
it's just all about yeah. love and family.
And it's about the people we love. And that's key. The second thing I learned, though, also, was the importance of, I don't know how this sort of chimes with you, but I think lots of us have things that when we do them, we feel, you know, it's almost like this is what I was put on the earth for, you know. I just love doing this. It gives me life. Maybe you feel this about what you do for a living. You know, you're talking to interesting people, I don't know, playing music, whatever. and you kind of feel, you know, this is what I love to do. This gives me energy. This gives me strength. This is healing. And in a way, you could give it a posh word, like a posh name, like vocation, for example. But it's really doing something that gives you a buzz and in a way helps others or makes the world a slightly better place or just adds something, some beauty to the world.
Yeah, it's purpose, isn't it? Purpose.
It absolutely is. And it's also, it's not just a purpose of, oh, I must do this, it's my duty.
Yeah.
But it's a purpose, I'm going to do this because it's my joy, actually. I love doing it and it actually fulfills some need somewhere. Mm. I read a theologian called Friedrich Buchner who said vocation is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep need meet. So your deep gladness meets the world's deep need. So you do something that you think, yeah, this is me, and I'm loving to do this. And it's actually, it could be a smaller thing or a headline worthy a thing as making the house ready for your grandchildren to come, or cooking a nice meal, or sorting people out so that they're all happy and settled. Or in my case, I've been a writer all my life, actually. But for a lot of that, I was a journalist with a charity, a Christian charity. And for a lot of that, though I was loving what I did, there was just something I wasn't doing that I wanted to do. And somebody said to me somewhere in this convalescence, or I came across the phrase, don't die with your music still inside you. And don't die with your music still inside you. Do that thing that you're passionate about. So what I, in fact, did was, obviously I was signed off sick anyway. I actually ultimately left my job. I still work back there sort of part-time sometimes. And I started to write things I'd wanted to write all my life. I was fortunate that my wife was in a good job, and so and the kids had left home and we'd paid for the house, so I was a bit freer to do that. But I wrote three novels, sort of speculative fiction, comedy, comic novels, and then I wrote these three books, of which Bread is one. And in doing those, it just felt, I'm actually not going to die with my music inside me. And it was life-giving. So to discover those two things, a sense of vocation and the importance of loving relationships, they sort of seemed much more important than so many other things that we spend so much of our life on. And as well as helping me get better, they've brought me actually to just a more satisfied place. I don't have that little voice inside me saying, well, you're not quite doing what you're still missing out on something. So So I put all that in this book, which is called Bread. You can read it on a short flight from Malaga to London. It's only a little book. And it just might give you, or give us, it certainly gave me, a direction thinking about these things, just to a life that is actually productive and happy and kind of restful. And I think even for people who are retired, or, you can still do purposeful things that help others, or that just make the world more beautiful. I got friends who paint, in the midst of very stressful lives, they go off and paint, and it just feeds them. So that was that's what the book's about. That was what I learnt, and it's just a privilege to come out the other side of that coma and to be able to talk about these things.
Oh, I bet it is. I absolutely love that phrase, don't die with your music inside you.
Oh, really, absolutely.
Yeah. I have to ask you, why Bread?
Okay, really, yes, good question, because if you search for the book on Amazon, you come up with all sorts of sourdough starters and bread yes. recipe books. What I think I meant was, it's the stuff of life, it's a sort of, it's bread that keeps us going, isn't it? You might have candy floss or ice cream or something, but it's bread that is the stuff of life. That's what keeps us going. That's what powers our engine. And I think I wanted to write about those things in our lives that actually power our engine. And it's great, actually. It's revolutionary. It's such a privilege to have, as many of your listeners, I think, will have been through really perhaps dark times. You'd come out the other side different and actually more focused on what's really important. Mm. So that's why it was called bread. It's the stuff of life, the stuff that really matters.
Fabulous. Well, it's been really inspirational chatting with you today. Thanks so much for being with us, Glenn.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been lovely. I really appreciated it.
If people want to get a copy of the book, it's called Bread, and it's by Glenn Myers, who we've been chatting to. The book is on our website, tre.radio. Glenn, thank you for being with us, and I don't think I'm ever going to forget that phrase, don't die with your music inside you.
I've got a feeling you probably won't either. I mean, die with your music inside you. So all
I'll
the
try
very
my
best.
Thanks so much, Glenn. Take care.
Great. You too. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.